This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Listen, I love Dave. That's, you know, if you put a McNeely to your Tyson, that would be, a hell of a showing. I mean, 800-919-3776.
Oh, my gosh. Dave Rothenberg is a gift, man. He's a gift.
He is absolutely that, and he will be back next week. I'm in for him this week. It's Carlin along with Canty today. Rick's power is out, and I'm sure working
Carlin,
diligently.
Why the hell does DiPietro not have a generator? I was just thinking
that's a great question. I mean, you know, Rick is living a life.
He's got
how do you not have a generator?
State, it just, I don't. Why does he not have a generator?
I don't know. I have no idea. Like, the generator to me, listen, they're not cheap. The whole house generator is not cheap. But, you know, I mean, I think we can establish that you could probably swing it. So I even have one of those little wheel generators. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I've got one that you could plug in the essentials to.
Sure, yeah.
But, that you know, I mean, that to me is what you have to have for me. Got to plug in the fridge. Got to absolutely be able to plug in the fridge. And I guess, and at the same time, I got to be able to plug in to do the show.
If there was one thing that I had to know that you had to have power for in your house, it was your refrigerator. No question about it. Like, if that was a Family Feud question, that would be the number one answer. Things that Carlin has to have power for in his house. The fridge.
Exactly. The fridge, the television, the freezer.
There you go.
Those three right in a row.
There you go.
And then we'll get to the broadcast unit to do the show. We'll get to that later on. But
you got to have the generator, though. I mean, I lived through Hurricane Sandy, and I was with the Giants at that time, and I remember having to stay in my house because I was afraid that looters were going to come. And you're talking about staying in a 50-degree house in the dead of winter. It was just one of those situations where it was like, I'm not doing this again. I got to make sure I have a generator. Like, it's just one of those things. Like, if you live through that experience and not having power for an extended period of time, if you have the means, you absolutely got to get a generator.
How long were you without power for Sandy?
I want to say it was like a week and a half. And Tom Coughlin didn't care about us not having power. You were expected to get to work at 7:55 because if you got there at 8, you were late. Remember, all the clocks under Coughlin were 5 minutes fast.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
How much was that fine? If you showed up late.
I want to say it was like $500 per minute. And if you missed 5 minutes, then it counted as a missed meeting. And then it was like 10 grand.
Oh.
Yeah. Coughlin didn't play those games.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah. Plays no games.
Well, the generator factor is just life-changing when you're able to get it. Even if it's just, like I said, the smaller one. But we had it. We didn't have a generator. That was our first house back then. And I'm sitting in front of the fire for a week. And that, you know, that wasn't a good scene. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see me sitting right up front trying to warm my hands and, in essence, sleeping on the couch for a week. It's not good.
Yeah, that's not a good situation to be in.
No, definitely not. And hopefully, for everybody that's listening and is dealing with the power issues right now, they're back much, much sooner than we had to deal with back then. 800-919-3776. Let's squeeze in a couple of more calls here. Here's Frank in New York. Frank, you're next, 98.7 ESPN. What do you got, bud?
Yeah, I wanted to mention a point that I'm not sure if anyone else is making about Lundqvist, which is that he's going to be under contract next year for $5.5 million. He's
eight and a half.
Fully guaranteed. Eight and a half. Okay. He's got a no trade clause, and it cannot leave him open for the extension draft. They have to protect him. So you can't just leave him out there. And then
you can buy him out. Yeah, you can buy him out.
Didn't you run out of compliance buyouts?
All right, Frank, we got to let you go. You're breaking up too much on us. But look, that this is where the tough conversation is. And it's already been discussed that they're going to have this conversation. But when you hear JD earlier in the year saying what he has said, we'll talk about it. We have chatted. We have had conversations already. That's what leads me to believe that they're going to buy him out this offseason. I think that's more likely than not, and it's not that, like, you're not applying any more pressure on Shesterkin by having him around or anything like that. to me, it's more just about respectful to Hank and what he has meant to the Rangers.
Just to give him the opportunity to have a clean start at the beginning of the season and pick the team that he actually wants to go to?
Yeah. If he still wants to play next year. And first of all, let's talk about this angle. Is Hank still a starting goalie in the league?
I think he's capable of being a starting goalie. I just think you have to have the right supporting cast around him, right?
You have to have a true opportunity to win, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he's still a starting goalie.
See, I think it's borderline, and if they're going to buy me out of the contract, if I were Hank, I'd really think about retiring at this point. And I can't try to climb into the athlete's mentality, and I know mm-hmm. that's not how athletes think, but I've never been in that situation before. But I would say if you are the level of player that he has been for his entire career, I think it's hard to go out sitting on the bench somewhere. I think I never want to be the guy that's hanging out at the party too long, Chris. You know, that doesn't know when it's over.
No, I got what you're saying, but here's the thing though. You realize that when you stop, you're never going to be able to play that game competitively again on that stage. And that's a hard thing to walk away from. Most athletes are told that they can't play anymore. They don't make that decision on their own. You know what I mean? Like, you're told, like, the team or the league no longer wants your services. And that's a tough thing to come to grips with, but when you have the opportunity to continue to play at the highest level, which I'm sure he will be afforded to if he were to be on the open marketplace, I mean, that's a hard thing to walk away from. I get wanting to, you know, have your career start and finish in the same place, but for most athletes, that's not the reality. That's not what happens. And so, I mean, if you're Hank and you still have that passion for the game, if you still have that desire, man, ride that thing till the wheels fall off. Like, that's just kind of how I approached it. That's what happened with my professional career. My career ended because of injury, not because I wanted it to. Like, I wasn't ready to walk away. My body told me I can't play anymore. You know, so, I mean, that's one of those funny things, Carlin. You know, it just is what it is. But I don't know that there's an easy way for the Rangers to be able to deal with this, to be able to manage this. Either way, there are going to be people that are critical of the decision that's made with Hank.
All right. Let's say at least it's 95% of the time. You can tell me if I'm wrong on that number. 95% of the time for a professional athlete, it doesn't end on what they want their terms with it to be.
No question. You're absolutely
so
right.
So if that's the case, how do you weigh as an athlete wanting to end it on your terms versus riding it out too long? Because to me, if I want to end it on my terms, this is about as close as I'm going to get that for the rest of my career for Hank. You know, I know it's not the mentality of the athlete to ever tell yourself you're not capable of doing something anymore. But where do you find that balance if you're that player and you're at this juncture?
To me, I don't know that balance exists. You know what I mean? I don't know if that athlete can come to that conclusion on their own. Like, that's what, like, family, close friends are involved in telling you, like, you know, this is what you need to do. This is what's in not only your best interest, but the best interest of your family. But, I mean, as an athlete, man, I mean, this is all you know. You've been doing this your entire life. This is what has separated you for your entire life. You've been identified as special because you can do this at a level that very few people can. And to walk away from that, that's asking a lot. Like, that's asking a lot. Like, most athletes have to be pushed out of the door in one form or fashion, whether it's injury or whether you just don't have an opportunity because nobody wants you. It's very rare that you have somebody decide, you know what, I'm just going to stop playing. Now, you get the outlier guys that decide, you know what, I won a championship and it's about that time, I'll walk away, right? You saw that with Ray Lewis. You saw with Peyton Manning, even though he did it with the Denver Broncos. Like, very few guys have the opportunity to go out on top like that. Most of the time you're told by the team or you're told by your body you can't do it anymore. And that's because a lot of guys want to try to do it as long as they possibly can. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I get it. And that's the true athlete mentality. So the fact that And I'm, don't get me wrong, I'm not blaming it here.
Yeah, sure.
But more often than not, the fact that they don't go get to go out on their own terms is just something that is a product of that mentality being the case, that I'm not ready to walk away because I'm always mentally designed to compete at the highest level at every moment.
Yeah, you'll never be able to, you'll never be ready to walk away if you're an athlete. You'll never be ready. Like, it's just not, that's not how you're built. So you're not going to be ready for it, but there becomes that point in time when you got to face the reality of your particular situation. And I guess the point that you're making with Hank is maybe it's about that time, because you think that he's a borderline starter right now, and that if you're not going to have a chance to compete at the highest levels as the guy that's the primary netminder, then why are you even doing it? Why would you even decide to go play somewhere else rather than just going out as, you know, an all-time great for the Rangers and an iconic figure in the New York sports landscape?
It's just, when I have the visions of that level of player, I think about Patrick Ewing in a Sonics uniform. You know, mm-hmm. I think about Willie Mays in a Mets uniform. You know, that
Carmelo Anthony in a Blazers uniform?
Well, I mean, let's pretend for a minute that he's on that level of player. And listen, I know he's his teammate, Dame Lillard. Good for Melo hitting the shot yesterday. For Melo hitting the shot.
That was a good moment for Mel, right?
It was a good moment. It was a good moment. Now, just don't get suckered in if you're the Knicks and sign him this offseason.
No.
We know it's possible. We know it's absolutely possible.
The Knicks are nowhere close to competing for a championship. At least the Blazers look like a team that's poised to get into the postseason, and Mel can be compliment to what you got with Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum. So out there, his role makes sense. With a team that's trying to rebuild from the ground up, I don't see the Knicks having any interest in bringing Carmelo Anthony back.
I hope not. But there are always those little whispers. My feeling is that those whispers are probably coming from Melo's side.
But I
hope that that's not the case. But yes, you're right. It was a nice moment yesterday for Melo. My heart was just so warm. I mean, I have never so accurately predicted exactly what would happen with an athlete as I did with Melo. And I don't want to pat myself on the back for it, but the second he got the contract from the Knicks, or even before that, it was so obvious that he was going to get the money and then at some point within a year or two force his way out, because they weren't going to be winning anytime soon, primarily because of him.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things. You wish that Carmelo could have, you know, had the kind of commitment to, you know, being the best that he could be then that he does now, right? You see him have the change with his diet, you know, his conditioning. His body looks completely different. I don't know if you see
that, Carl,
but his body looks completely different to me.
He does look very, very skinny.
It's just like the dedication that he's had just to have an opportunity to catch on and compete in the NBA. It's almost like, you know, it's something that he took for granted during his time with the Knicks versus now, where he realizes he's got to do all the little things right just to have a chance. But we've always recognized that Carmelo Anthony has that skill set where he can score at will. And in the right situation, you know, he could be, you know, a high-level player. It just didn't feel like he took it as seriously as he should have when he was with the Knicks when he was in his prime. But good on him that he's having this renaissance in the twilight of his career. You know, I'm happy for him that he's able to have this moment and enjoy playing the game. He's got more playing days behind him than in front of him, so you just like to see athletes enjoy it on their way out the door.
All right, let's hit a call in here. Here's Dennis in Huntington next on 98.7 ESPN. Dennis, what do you got?
Hey, what's going on, Carlin? I know you got a quick, happy trigger there, so please just let me make my baseball point before you dump me.
All right,
so
thanks for the call, Dennis. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
So, Rick, Canty, you should remember this. Rick has been bragging about this mega generator that he has, that it can power his entire house and it can charge his Tesla at the same time. I don't know if you remember.
What the hell are we doing?
I don't know why. I think he's playing hooky. But
Wow.
I just wanted to ask Candy.
Nah, he's not a bad teammate. He's not Yoenis Cespedes. Like, he's not going to do that. Like Rico says, he's got no power. He's got no power. He can't do the show.
I'm not going to lie. Now I'm thinking about he just doesn't want to work with me.
You think it's personal?
It could be.
Wow. Don't take it personal.
He's a vindictive bastard, as we know. I mean, honestly.
Shots fired.
Every time I watch one of these Yankee games and they win in dramatic fashion and everything, I'm all pumped up. But then it starts to seep into me, like, is this season even going to finish? Like, is this all for nothing? Like, do you have that same feeling I'm getting, like this bittersweet feeling?
You know, I do worry about it, but I just feel like there's too much at stake for the owners and for the players for them not to finish the season. Like, I feel like they will find a way. And because they do have these alternative training sites where they've got, you know, these guys from their farm systems, they've got up to 30 players in these sites. And, you know, because they have that in place, because MLB has come to the conclusion that they're going to keep rosters at 28 players with the big league clubs, I do think they'll finish. Now, they might not have every single team play 60 games, but I do think we'll finish the season and then we'll have a playoffs.
I have never felt better about that than I do right now. And I know that might sound bizarre because of what we've seen with the Marlins and with the Cardinals. But, Chris, I honestly believe because of what we've seen with the Marlins and the Cardinals that a lot of these players needed to see what the outcome is and how their lone actions can affect an entire team. And not just because they're going to be knocked out, but because that paycheck could go away if you're not playing games. And that's honestly what, you know, it's like the NFL where 50% of these guys are making $1 million or less for the entire year, which means they're making a third of that. They need every penny that they can get here. And you have to start making those right decisions if you want this to finish. I actually think this happening, assuming that nobody really gets violently ill or, you know, God forbid anything worse, I actually don't think it was a bad thing for a wake-up call for this for the league.
No, that's what Derek Jeter said in his statement yesterday. And so you hope that everybody around baseball is paying attention and everybody around sports for that matter. The one thing I will say is that I think baseball is trying to take more steps in the right direction by putting a compliance officer on every big league club to make sure that these teams are following the protocols. That's important. I don't know why the hell they didn't start out with that approach, but it's something that's clearly necessary because it didn't feel like you could trust all of the players coming into this situation. You're talking about 700-800 plus guys. So, I mean, you're going to have a couple of guys in there that aren't going to do the right things, and you have to have the policies enforced in order to keep everybody safe and protect the integrity of the season. But I just feel like moving forward, because the Marlins and the Cardinals outbreak didn't stop the season, I just feel like both sides, the owners and the players, are committed to seeing this thing through to the end. So, yeah, I don't watch the baseball games worrying that a shutdown is imminent. I just don't. I enjoy them for what it is.
And I think that you are seeing, and I know it's early to say this, but what you spoke of earlier about the Rangers and taking this experience and learning from it and, you know, kind of holding it in. Mm-hmm. I think you are seeing that with the Yankees so far this season from game 6 last year. And I know that's early to say something like that.
No, but why are you saying it's early to say something like that?
Well,
Aaron Judge talked about it.
He talked about it.
He said after game 6, he told the guys in the clubhouse, remember this feeling.
Yep.
Use this as fuel for 2020. That's what he said. So it's not early for you to mention that.
Well, but my point is, it being early to mention it is more about, like, all right, does it really mean anything until the postseason? Okay. But they are playing with that level of edge and intensity that he would want them to based on those comments.
Carla, let me ask you a serious question, because I know there are a few teams out there record-wise that are around where the Yankees are at. But is there anybody better than the Yankees right now, like playing better baseball than the Yankees?
Not playing better baseball than the Yankees right now.
No.
I mean,
you want to have the conversation about are the Dodgers a better team than the Yankees talent-wise, okay, I guess that would be legitimate. But, I mean, You're not putting the Cubs in the Twins.
No. There's one other team.
Not even the Braves are on the same level as the Yankees. Like, they're just not.
No. No. There's one team in that discussion, and it's the Dodgers. But I look at the Yankees, and I other than small concerns with the rotation that, you know, Paxton is going to actually end up getting to where he needs to get to this year, all of that, I don't look at anybody else and think they're in the same league.
Yeah, Paxton is probably my biggest concern as a Yankees fan. Far number two would be Gary Sanchez because he looks lost at the plate.
Yeah.
But after those two guys, my third concern is health. That's it.
Yeah. And Sanchez wouldn't even worry me that much right now, considering the Yankees can have, and Sanchez worries me just from the standpoint that he can go in a slump for a month and a half. But when guys go into slumps, there's always going to be somebody hitting in that lineup. There's always going to be somebody hitting in that lineup, and that's going to more than make up for it. So
Yep. But then the other thing where you say you have to look at the glass half full with Sanchez is that Gerrit Cole talked about how great of a game he called the other night.
Yep, loves him. Yeah.
When's the last time we heard a pitcher talking about how Sanchez called a great game?
Yeah, and look, we could talk about the, you know, the framing and all that stuff with how he's down on one knee and all that now. If Cole is saying that about Sanchez, everybody else has to pay attention to that in that staff.
Well, yeah, you know? Because we've been missing that dominant ace in the postseason. Now, I know Tanaka's gone out there and pitched great in the postseason. He's one of those guys that you trust. But, I mean, we haven't had a pitcher like Gerrit Cole. We paid him $324 million for a reason. We felt like that was necessary in order to get over the hump. And when that guy says, yeah, he feels great about throwing to Gary Sanchez, even if Gary Sanchez isn't hitting, you like the fact that he's behind the dish just because the best pitcher on the staff feels comfortable throwing him the baseball.
11:26.
Maybe that's just me.
No, it's not just you. I took I paid very close attention to that the other night. As you would notice by, you know, listening to Savages in the Box, which is a Yankee podcast, by the way, available Monday through Friday. Although I didn't even do one today because I couldn't even tell you who the pitchers were. They didn't even lay that out there.
Exactly. Exactly. Everything's up in the air, man. It's 2020. What else you need to say? It's 2020.
I'm so tired of hearing that, too. No offense. I'm so tired. I have a shirt that says 2020 sucks. And I can't tell you how many people, if I go to the supermarket, just point at me. I mean, no joke. At least 20 people will say something if I go to the supermarket wearing that shirt. At least.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it.
All right. 11:27. More calls coming up. I got time for it at 800-919-3776. I do want to get to the other superstars who have not won championships and where Henrik Lundqvist would rank on that list. But also, there is a college football team in the FBS that has decided not to play this year, the very first one to do it, and it's one in the area we'll discuss next. It's Carlin in for Dave Rothenberg. Rick's, I mean, he says, and I use air quotes when I say that, I'm out of power, but apparently a full house generator that I wasn't aware of. So I'm just assuming he wanted no part of this for 2 hours. Yeah, let me take the day off. You know what? That power's not working. Yeah. All kinds of problems. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. Son of a... John in Massapequa, let's get him in because he's been waiting a bit on Mello. John, what's going on?
Fellas, how you doing? Chris, what's up? I just wanted to make sure I didn't misunderstand you earlier. Like, were you saying that Melo forced his way out of New York?
Yeah.
But that's not true. Phil Jackson forced him out of New York.
No. I mean, listen, I think Phil played a role in that because Phil never wanted to bring him back, which, if people would actually look at it objectively, might have been one of the smartest takes that Phil had while he was here besides drafting Porzingis. Again, the Knicks were not – but the Melo was back because of James Dolan, and they were never going to let him go, and they had made the trade to go get him, and Dolan had stepped in to make sure that they made the trade to go get him. But Melo didn't want to be here anymore either. That was more important, and that was – The crux of it, because it's not just Melo, to be fair. It's life in the NBA. You get the contract now, and you get to determine whether or not you want to play there if you're unhappy within a couple of years.
100%, 100% right about that. But in my opinion, Phil Jackson was the driving force behind Melo leaving because, honestly, in my opinion, Carmelo was the only superstar that I've, in my lifetime, that I've ever even really wanted, he really wanted to be here. You know, like, everyone else, they talk about the Knicks when we're playing them, like, oh, yeah, it's nice to play at the Garden, but they don't ever want to take on the challenge. Melo took on that challenge, and he was forced out by
No, he wasn't. Melo was not. John, saying that he was forced out, thanks for the call, I think is misrepresenting the situation. I don't think Melo was forced out. I think it was Melo wanting out. It was Phil Jackson never wanting him back to begin with. And I don't think that Phil was necessarily wrong with that.
Let's just call it what it is, right? The Knicks have been a dysfunctional organization for the better part of the last decade, and the two faces of that are Carmelo Anthony and Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
And so Mel, after he was being scapegoated by the organization and by a segment of the fan base, you know, he probably soured on things and he probably wanted a fresh start elsewhere, which is why he moved on. And, you know, while Carmelo was here, the Knicks were never going to be able to properly rebuild. So it just made sense for both sides to part company and try to get back on the right track. And that's why I'm saying it's good for Carmelo to have that moment down there at the NBA bubble with the Blazers now, being able to be kind of like that guy that can be a sniper from deep in clutch situations like you saw against the Rockets last night, but not be somebody that has to shoulder the burden of the entire team. Like, that's where he's at in his career. So that's a good spot for him. I just don't think him being with the New York Knicks right now as they're trying to rebuild is the right move to make. So I know there have been some rumors, some grumblings about that. That does not need to happen.
Mm-mm. Absolutely not. Yeah. Now that his name has come up in this context, I'm going to throw some names at you, and I'm curious where Lundqvist would rank among these New York athletes to never win a championship for you. Okay?
All right.
And you know, for like, all right, Melo, was Melo, would you call Melo a superstar in the NBA at one point?
Yeah. Yeah. Mel was a superstar.
For how long?
I mean, listen, there were a couple of years in there where Carmelo Anthony, you could argue, was the best scorer in the NBA.
All right. I'll give you that. And I shouldn't say I'll give you that. I think that's accurate. There were probably 3 years where Melo was a superstar. Okay.
Yeah, he got a scoring title, right, earlier this decade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so I'll put him on that level.
Okay.
Where does Lundqvist, and for that matter, Melo, fit in this list? Mike Piazza, Don Mattingly, Curtis Martin. I'll put David Wright on that level.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Ewing, Joe Klecko. It's tough, right?
Yeah, that's a tough list. I mean, if I'm trying to call it like I see it, I think Mel would be up there. I think Mel would be up there. I would probably put Ewing at the top of that list.
Yep. Then I would definitely put him first.
Yeah, I would put Ewing at the top of that list. Then you're probably talking about a coin flip with Hank and Piazza.
Hmm.
And then you're probably talking about the rest of those guys being grouped in there in that conversation for number three.
And as Ray Dinahan points out, you've got a current one that could be on the list for the moment, but these are all guys that are retired at the, you know, who have gone on.
Yeah.
But the current one would be DeGrom.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I think DeGrom could end up being number one on that list overall. And obviously you don't want him to be.
Yeah, you know what? DeGrom could be number one based on his production, how he plays. But in terms of overall star power, I don't know about that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, so,
because there's between best player versus star power. There's a difference.
So DeGrom's personality would hold him back on that front?
Yeah, I think so. The fact that he doesn't play every single game, that, you know, he's every fifth day, you know what I mean? Like, those things factor into the conversation.
Yeah, but if he wins, and listen, take what you will for this
he's
year.
He's the best pitcher in baseball. Like, he's got a chance to win a third straight Cy Young. Yeah. How many pitchers can make that claim? Not a lot. So, no. Like he's special, but I mean, and I'm just asking. I mean, when you start talking about iconic New York sports figures,
mm-hmm.
is Jacob DeGrom popping in your head?
No, because of what you're saying.
Yeah.
And he's still here. I think that's part of it too. We think about guys who have gone on to pass, but
sure.
For me, I think it's absolutely Ewing number one.
Mm-hmm.
I would put Mattingly and Piazza in front of Lundqvist. I'd probably put, and this will sound strange because this guy did not have that personality that you're talking about, but
mm-hmm.
man, is he still in my eyes a remarkably underrated player, Curtis Martin.
Yeah.
Curtis Martin was a tremendous. Yeah.
I'm with you on that one. I'm with you on that one. But he's not a name that jumps out at you in terms of iconic New York sports figure. He's
right, because he doesn't – you're right about that. He doesn't have that out-on-the-town personality or
– he's
or
a Hall of Famer. Listen, he's a Hall of Famer. He's a great player.
Yep.
He's a great player.
The other guy that I think should be up there, and people will look at it and say how, because he's not even a Hall of Famer, but he should be a Hall of Famer – I mean, Joe Klecko was all pro at three positions on the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was an unbelievable player that was part of a great group, but he was the best player of the sack exchange back in the 80s. But anyway, that aside, but I think about Wright as, here's the thing, Chris, like I think about David Wright in terms of New York stars, but I don't necessarily think he's on that level of player. If that, you know, production, he had a really good career for a while, and it should have been much longer as we
the
know.
The injuries is what keeps him from being there.
Right.
I think you're absolutely right. The injury is what kept him from getting to that point where he's in this particular conversation.
And Mattingly was a superstar who had a back injury that, you know, just really broke him down the last few years of his career. And even still had those bright moments, and when he did, it became something special, but a guy that should be in the Hall of Fame, not based on what he did, but based on the fact that he should have had a couple of more years of being dominant, if not for the injury. And it was a back injury, so it was a gradual thing, as opposed to a guy like Kirby Puckett, which was an injury, and then boom, that was it.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And so you say all that to say that Carmelo Anthony would be last on your list. If you're ranking all of these New York sports icons.
Well, let me go look at this list. Yes, dead last.
You are a savage. Not only do you podcast with Savages in the Box, but you are a savage.
There is a list of eight people
Savagery.
Here. Yeah, there is a list of eight people here, and I would put him eighth.
Wow. So, okay, here it is.
Chris, I wanted to get this in. And UConn becomes the first school in the FBS to officially suspend their 2020 season, and it looks like for football, and it looks like they're not going to they're playing as an independent this year, mm-hmm. and already had four of their games canceled because they're a non-conference opponent. But you know, they put out the statement after checking with doctors and such like that, we've made this decision. Also had a statement from the players as well, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, well, I think they're taking a practical approach to this year. I mean, the reality is there's so much up in the air for these colleges and universities, and to try to play sports in the middle of a pandemic without having the resources that these professional sports teams do, I just think it was going to be hard to secure the health and well-being of the players. And so, yeah, I don't think UConn is going to be the only FBS team to cancel their football season. I just don't. I know these conferences are going to conference-only schedules, but they're being optimistic. And I think that at some point we're going to be faced with the reality that they're not going to be able to have the college football season this fall.
It's going to be very difficult to do.
Yeah.
The thing I would say about it, though, is it's easier for UConn to do it, being a team that's playing as an independent,
sure.
had four of those games canceled, and two others were in jeopardy with Virginia and North Carolina, and they don't have big-time TV money that they are losing out on.
Yeah, and I get all of that, but I mean, what it comes to is these are not professional athletes. this is amateurism.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, if you can't keep the kids absolutely safe, then there's no reason to have them out there. And there's so many unknowns with this. And to ask a teenager or a young 20-something to be able to make a decision about his health, both in the short term and the long term, when they can't completely appreciate the gravity of the situation, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't think they should play college football this year. And I think at some point they're going to face that reality. I mean, it's already on the fence for the University of Michigan, and we know where their school president is at with everything and his background as an epidemiologist. Yep. Like, it just feels like it's going to be tough to pull off. The Ivy League already said we're not doing it. It's not happening. Now, the Ivy League, there aren't huge television contracts, so that made it a simpler decision for them. But they were the ones that were ahead of the curve in terms of canceling their conference basketball tournament back in March. Remember that?
Yep.
That was absolutely the Ivy League that did it first, and then you saw a domino effect. You saw all the other conferences decide to do it as well. So even though some of the bigger conferences like the SEC, the Big 12, the ACC, they might be late to the party, I think they're all going to be forced to eventually face the fact that we're not going to be able to have a college football season because you just can't justify putting those kids at risk. You can't.
And today, like we saw over the weekend with players from the Pac-12, players from the Big Ten put out a letter in the Players Tribune. It was mostly dealing with, and I just took a cursory glance, all of the health concerns around COVID-19. I don't believe, I'm not positive, again, I haven't read the whole thing, that it was on the revenue split as well.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.